Ms. Morris, you are first.
Yes, hello. I'm Nancy Morris. I want to start off with a quote from Martin Luther King. There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but they must do it because conscience tells them it is right. We as concerned citizens of this country and the planet must speak out before it is definitely too late. To plan another explosives handling wharf at Bangor Naval Base to unload nuclear and conventional missiles in light of the current level of biosphere destruction and economic failure around the world seems to be the thinking of a sociopathic organization. It is inconceivable that our government would allow the Navy carte blanche with $782 million while important human service programs are severely cut or eliminated. This is only more evidence of a destructive, diluted thinking process from a military-industrial complex that even former President Eisenhower warned us against. We must stop now supporting any nuclear weapons proliferation and immediately acknowledge the need to find other ways for conflict resolution that do not destroy the entire biosphere we are all dependent on for our survival here in this country and worldwide. It would actually be a blessing to all to see the Trident nuclear missile submarines dismantled and the entire base made into a park of peace and a marine sanctuary for all life that is now continually threatened by weapons testing. We must stop and see that wasting money by building this wharf and continually expanding our capacity for nuclear harm is akin to a criminal action against all of us and all of humanity. So obviously I'm against this project, and I wish that our money was put to far better and more humane uses. Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, thank you very much for that. It's very difficult to get up and speak, and so not interrupting people, whether it's with boos or hisses or yays or whatever, or clapping, as long as you do it in between, that's great. So if we could keep that up, that'd be terrific. Mr. Boyle?
Todd Boyle. I was once at submarine school and was assigned to the Queenfish, but I never went. I quit the Navy. I'm opposed to nuclear weapons on principle. Towards the end of my comments, I'll point out some important environmental issues that don't appear in your report. But I'm opposed to nuclear weapons on principle because they're indiscriminate and they guarantee harm to civilian populations if they're ever used. They're not a defensive weapon. They're sort of a blackmail weapon. They're sort of a guaranteed mutual assured destruction weapon. I don't believe the United States is threatened. I'm sorry, I just don't. I think the Cold War, there was in a dangerous era during the 1950s, and by the 60s it was stabilized. And I think that since then it's just we have what we have is institutional momentum and profit by industry and by the military itself. The U.S. has such an overkill capability that only the U.S. can really lead in the downsizing of the nuclear force around the world. And I think that that's what we should happen, okay? Instead of downsizing, what I see happening is just this insane momentum. And I think we need to stop building and start downsizing, start dismantling, stop improving, stop maintaining, okay? Just sort of like let the air out of it. We don't need it. I also oppose the excessive military presence in the state of Washington, which is like between 7 and 10% of the economic activity in the state. I don't believe that this activity is defending us. In fact, it's making us less safe. Okay? I also oppose the U.S. military itself on moral grounds. It should be vastly downsized to the defense of the territory that's our jurisdiction. The U.S. has fought many wars since World War II, including Korea, Vietnam, and Iraq. We killed a couple of million innocent people in Korea who never attacked the United States or threatened the United States. We killed millions more in the Vietnam War, and then we're somewhere around a million, if reports are accurate, in the Iraq War, the two Iraq Wars. And these wars are immoral. Those people never attacked us, and we're not facing any threat. All of the wars since World War II have not been self-defense. These have been aggressions. Okay? A minute to go. So I condemn the United States military itself. I think that they're living in a kind of an artificial groupthink bubble in which you convince yourself that you're defending the United States. What you're really defending is a global empire, a global system of economics and politics, and which I don't need. Now let me just wrap it up on the environmental issue that you overlooked. I don't want that base over here at all because it's a red-hot target for a nuclear strike, and if there's a nuclear strike, there's going to be a lot of fallout. And me and my family are not going to be safe over here. I live in Kirkland, not far enough. I don't want that thing anywhere around here. It's making me less safe. It's just dangerous. I don't like you guys. I want you to just downsize the whole thing. I don't think there should be any Trident submarines. Sorry.
Okay. Next speaker is Mrs. White.
Price is right.
Oh, God.
We find it absolutely extraordinary that you who assail the seven seas would hold this hearing so close to both the Earth Day and Easter holidays. For you, with your naval weapons testing, have been engaging in dangerous shell games aimed at the gullible American populace that finances them, turning their celebrated environment a darker shade of green in hopefully what will become an increasingly silent spring. One as mysteriously silent as the mainstream media concerning this alleged public hearing tonight. We have always found selling out superior to shelling out, and so for this, we offer a 21-gun salute to the U.S. Navy, with hopefully no explosive charges, particularly those for war crimes, involved. This corporate canonization may also serve to resurrect the 11.5 million marine mammals that you, of the U.S. Navy, will have taken out some years from now, including the many cetaceans, which literally will perish beneath the radar, as well as the many land-based bipeds who will perish from maladies less traceable to your depleted uranium, white phosphorus, and unspecified weather weapons that include not only typhoons, but harpoons. We also applaud that well-named commercial military agency, NOAA, which stays afloat by robo-signing off on your many man-made deluges worldwide. What others consider an abomination, we consider a money bomb that simply radiates corporate profits, hopefully less traceable by accounting detectors than by all of the radiation detectors your colleagues in the U.S. government have recently removed. More such nuclear bomb loading docks must be built immediately at Bangor so that Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Fukushima can readily reproduce like rabid radioactive Easter bunnies escaping from their pens to defecate the earth and line our ever-deepening corporate pockets, as well as those of your bell-bottoms, with their filthy lucre, as the pockets of the American people are being increasingly emptied with useless military expenditures, while basic government services are, like them, being eliminated. We of the few world order think it high time, as well as high tide, that those who live in the homeland security designated constitution-free coastal zones under maritime martial law learn their place in that larger constant-free zone, the land of the fee and home of the knave. To say to the U.S. Navy regarding Bangor nuclear submarine base with feckless abandon, we who are about to fry salute you. The hidden hand of the market salutes you now as well. Treason's greetings to all, and to all, a good night.
Next speaker is Barbara Cepeda.
I worked at Boeing.
Could you just state our name? I know it's just
Barbara
a formality.
Cepeda.
Thank you.
Z-E-P-E-D-A.
Thank you.
And I worked at Boeing when they turned the KC-135 into the 707. That was the nicest thing that ever happened to Boeing because they were forced to compete in the world with something the world needed, a plane. And evidently that plane lasts longer than our stadiums, and it evidently is going to last longer than the 50 years that this cement dock for nuclear submarines is going to last. As previous speakers have said really what I want to say, but there was a comment in an EIS from the people who were in there, in the EIS that you've put out, the scoping of it, that the costs were not calculated. I tried to find out if anybody here knew what the cost of a Trident submarine was, the maintenance cost, and I couldn't. At least we got a range of $500 or $700 billion, which you have to double because every dollar is borrowed, on the cost of the dock. But the problem is what nuclear submarines cost and what they cost with dollars, ecology, and economy. And the only way you can understand how much it costs is that there is nobody that can give me what it costs to decommission a nuclear submarine. Nobody. And I've lived in Hanford. My mom worked there. She died of cancer of the pancreas. But I've even the people there can't tell you how much it costs because we haven't cleaned up one single nuclear piece of garbage yet. I'm going to ask people here to take out their pencils and write down this name. Dr. Alexei, A-L-E-X-E-Y, Yablokov, Y-A-B-L-O-K-O-V, Y-A-B-L-O-K-O-V. He is the nuclear scientist that oversaw Chernobyl during its construction and during its mess. And he's written a book that is very hard to get a hold of, but try.
All right. Our next speaker is Norm Kegel.
Norm Kegel. There's one glaring omission in the draft EIS. There's no mention of release of radioactivity or risk of radioactivity. And you might think as you wandered around the next room that why should you worry? There's no nuclear material because there's no mention. I don't see the word nuclear mentioned at all. In the whole draft EIS, there's one mention of it in a secret document mentions nuclear. But we all know that there are nuclear missiles there, nuclear bombs. And as we saw last month in Japan, the combination of nuclear material and an earthquake zone is very dangerous. The documents put out by the Navy talk about supporting the Trident submarines for at least 30 years. And I want to point out to you that in 30 years, nuclear weapons could be abolished. There are at least two promising signs. One is the New START treaty that was recently ratified by the Senate, and which is reducing the number of weapons that we have, as well as Russia. And if that continues, and I hope it will, by 2042, there may be no nuclear weapons on this planet, and therefore no need for a wharf to handle them. And another one is that there's an organization of mayors around the world that was started off by the mayors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which is against nuclear power. And their aim is to abolish nuclear weapons by the year 2020. That's a very ambitious plan, and I hope that they succeed in that.
John Rogers.
Hello there. My name is John Rogers. I'm an unemployed inside machinist. I have repaired a number of naval vessels in my career. I have fixed valves and a number of other pieces of machinery on frigates and AOLs. But what I would like to be doing is working on a merchant fleet. This country needs a merchant fleet. That is the kind of ship we need. We need to have international trade, and we need to have products to export. We need our own ships to carry those products. We do not need to spend more money on submarines and other warships that we dare not use. That is a very poor use of our money. We are losing our prosperity. We're losing our future. We're losing everything so that we can blow this whole world up. I think that's a very poor use of our money. There may have been some need for defense at one time, but now it looks like it's a bit crazy. As I can see it, we're making a very big mistake. Let's think a little bit more about where we're headed. I think where we're headed is hell. So let's think about it. I beg you to do that. My fears, if they are ever to come to pass, scare me. Because if I should say, I told you so, it will mean the same thing as goodbye.
Mary Gleiston.
My name is Mary Gleiston. I live in Kingston, and I actually attended the Paulsbo hearing but didn't speak. The reason I didn't speak was because I had the feeling that the EIS process is ineffectual in its window dressing and a political system which seems more and more controlled by military and corporate interests. Citizens' concerns about environmental issues are duly recorded, but the real issues are outside the scope of the hearing. The problem, it seems to me, is that there is no place to raise the real issues, so we must raise them at every opportunity, or we forfeit whatever power we have as citizens and whatever integrity we have as individuals. The real issues, as I see them, are that our country is bankrupt. We cannot provide decent housing, health care, and education for our people. Money, energy, and other materials to the tune of $700 million spent on a redundant wharf results in the fact that there are fewer resources available for meeting the needs of the people on the planet. The fact that the Navy is withholding from public review the rationale for the expenditure of more than $700 million and the cost-benefit analysis of a second wharf on the West Coast makes tonight's exercise seem futile. Common sense questions like, why not station 7 subs at Bangor and 7 subs at Kings Bay instead of 8 at Bangor and 6 at Kings Bay, which would seem to lessen the need for additional operational hours at Bangor, won't be answered. We need to continue to demand answers to the big questions and accountability from our government for its spending priorities, or we acknowledge that our democratic process is irreparable and that the hopes and ideals of our country will never be fulfilled. So we must continue to ask, in a world of shortages, why do we need the wharf, which can fairly be described as existing for a weapons system that is obsolete, dangerous, expensive, illegal, and barbaric. 2 years ago, I wrote a guest editorial for the North Kitsap Herald in response to the first scoping meeting for this project, and the issues that I tried to raise there largely haven't been addressed, and I will just raise them again. In addition to the usual adverse environmental impacts of construction of a project of this magnitude, traffic noise, pollution, the proposed increase in wharf activity will result in additional marine traffic, submarines, construction barges, tugs, and other vessels, adding pollution to the water and disturbing marine life in the canal. The Navy's failed to address the safety risks of increased explosive handling activity at the site and the additional potential for accidents while moving nuclear missiles from submarines, loading them onto trucks, and transporting them to and from the shore. The rocket propellant on a single Trident is way too dangerous for us to take this risk.
Thank you. Next speaker is Heather Thim.
Good evening. That's Heather Trim, T-R-I-M.
That's an R, sorry.
I work at People for Puget Sound on toxic pollution and shoreline health for the entire sound. Hood Canal is a treasure, as is all of Puget Sound and the Straits. The area that is being proposed for this new facility has extremely high-quality eelgrass beds, and the whole Hood Canal, as well as this area, is home to endangered species. People for Puget Sound has been engaged in the fight in recent years to oppose a similarly large pier that was the Fred Hill gravel mine in Hood Canal for the exact same reasons that we're concerned about this one as well. Overwater coverage. This is 6.3 acres of overwater coverage that's proposed. Another concern that I didn't really see very well addressed in the document is the issue of artificial light in the evening in terms of the impact on wildlife and how that would actually be addressed. Nor, when I asked at the open house, was there a great answer about the issue of the overwater coverage in the shallow area in terms of solid topping versus grading and allowing light through in the shallow area, in that area of very high-quality eelgrass beds. A key question is, the Suquamish tribe in the scoping document letter that they sent you, which is was dated July of 2009, and they were concerned, as we are, about their treaty fishing rights, asked why would you not, after you complete this new facility, demolish the existing one? Your own calculations show that the new facility would, in fact, take care of your existing needs, and you would have a lot more operational days on the docket with having the two facilities there. That is a lot of overwater coverage that would be sort of the new net increase, and we'd like to see not that new net increase in overwater coverage. This is a facility that will have a significant cumulative impact on Puget Sound, contrary to the way it's stated in your document. We hope the Navy and all the other federal agencies are working very hard to restore the health of Puget Sound right now. It has been damaged by decades of small cuts that add up. This is another example where this could be that kind of problem. So we hope that you guys will take these comments very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Leonard Iger.
Evening. Leonard Iger. It's E-I-G-E-R. The draft environmental impact statement regarding the proposed Trident Naval Base Kitsap Bangor explosive handling wharf is wholly inadequate because it doesn't consider the environmental impact of accidental or purposeful detonation of the Trident nuclear and or conventional explosives for which the wharf is designed. According to the DEIS, the purpose and need to construct a new explosive handling wharf at NBK Bangor is to support future Trident program requirements for the 8 Trident submarines currently homeported at NBK Bangor and the Trident D5 strategic weapons system. Yet in its stated commitment to core values, the Navy's Strategic Systems Programs, SSP, author of the DEIS and private contract coordinator, vows to, quote, do what is right and honest and always tell the truth. The question that needs asking is not only whether the Navy needs a new EHW, but what is right and honest and who is telling the truth. As we speak, the Disarm Now plowshares, 2 fathers, 2 grandmothers, and a sister, all elderly, are incarcerated in the SeaTac's Federal Detention Center. Their crime was to enter NBK Bangor Base to peaceably put up a banner stating the truth, quote, disarm now, Trident illegal and immoral, end quote. The SSP and Navy base their pursuit of a new EHW on the presumed legality of the life extension program for the 8 Trident submarines home ported at Kitsap Bangor Naval Base to provide a, quote, credible deterrent, end quote, until at least the year 2042. To be honest and truthful, we all know or should know that the vast and indiscriminate heat, blast, and radiation of any Trident nuclear weapon cannot be controlled in time or space. A credible deterrent is an active, ever-present, real, and fundamentally unlawful threat to unleash these weapons by accident or design. Trident is a grotesque weapon of mass destruction that inherently violates the Navy's own law of armed conflict, which prohibits any weapon such as the Trident that is incapable of distinguishing between civilian and military targets. We all have a legal obligation to pursue in good faith and bring to a conclusion negotiations leading to nuclear disarmament in all its aspects. Because of the continuing very serious contamination problems at Hanford Nuclear Site, citizens of the state of Washington certainly understand that the corporations that profit from building new facilities or extending the lives of these weapons should be held liable up front for all accidents and harms from a Trident nuclear weapons system. There is clearly no reason for a new wharf because preparation to use or threaten to use the Trident system is fundamentally unlawful. The reality of the grave threat posed by the presence of these weapons in and from Naval Base Kitsap Bangor can no longer be denied. For practical and environmental reasons, too, we need to get on with good faith, complete nuclear disarmament.
Thank you. Let me read ahead again the next speakers. After Scott Schock will be Mary Hansen, followed by Izumi Stevens, Barbara Tomlinson, and Dory Rainex.
Thank you. My name is Scott Schock, S-H-O-C-K. I'm a civil environmental engineer with an active student of economics as well. I've done work at Bangor on groundwater remediation when I was with a prior firm. I've also worked with Navy folks at CV folks at ADAC Alaska. I appreciate the professionalism of Navy personnel that I've worked with. I'm here representing family and neighbors on Hood Canal. My family owns properties there. I own a property that on Thorndike Bay that overlooks Bangor. I'm a nervous neighbor of a nuclear weapons facility. Some concerns that I have. Visual impact of the huge buildings, first of all. It's an obvious huge structure there that I look at every day when I'm there. And adding another larger one next to it is not something to look forward to. Noise and the noise impacts of a four-year construction project and the marine impacts are a concern to me. The potential impacts on shellfish safety of turbidity, what's going to be stirred up that's been buried in those sediments, being under natural recovery, buried under cleaner sediments. When you stir those up, what contaminated sediments are going to be released, and is my shellfish on my beach going to be safe? Is earthquake engineering built into this facility plan for a major earthquake that this region is potentially capable of receiving? Will earthquake engineering be retrofitted into the existing structure so that we don't have a nuclear accident because of an earthquake event that could happen here in a serious event? I have not heard a clearly defined explanation as to why the Navy can't work with the existing facility. I believe we don't need an additional facility. We cannot afford the additional facility. The no action alternative is not clearly explained as to why it cannot be made to work. And as a taxpayer, we have a failing dollar, which was making new lows this week. No one wants our debt. We're losing our reserve currency status. We as Americans need to start to think differently. We need to think creatively about how to do more with less, because we're going to be forced to. Our dollar is failing. We're going to have a currency crisis, and hyperinflation is coming. We must be prepared to deal with it creatively. That is the bottom line. I'm appreciative of professionalism, but we have to start thinking differently. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Hansen.
Thank you for holding this hearing. I appreciate it. And thank you to everybody who's here. I really appreciate seeing how many people are here, because that's a real sign of hope for me. We never should be ashamed of the fact that we haven't gotten rid of the whole Trident mistake. It's just something we have to do in the future. That's all it is. We're human beings, and we made a mistake in 19, whatever it was, you put out the dates, but anyway, when the Poseidon came, and then later when the first Tridents came in the early 70s, nobody had the seismic information that we have now. It's that simple. So they made a decision to put the Trident base there. But now we know we have three different kinds of earthquakes. A 9.0 is actually likely. I talked to seismologists back in the 80s because I had this concern because I used to live in California and I actually moved here to get away from the earthquake danger. Oh boy, interesting. But in any case, the effect of constantly working with missile motor fuel and live nuclear material on this wharf over the years, when we are in an area where a 9.0 earthquake is likely, doesn't make sense. We have to remedy that mistake. The decision to put the Tridents at Bangor is a mistake that needs to be remedied. And I also feel in the meantime there are some ways to make the situation safer. Obviously, I'm opposed to building the wharf. But I also am opposed to the practice of using live missiles with warheads. In the time between now and when we actually get rid of the Tridents, I think that it is only safe to do whatever practice is done without using live missile motors and live nuclear weapons. And I feel that storing them in a way that can withstand a 9.0 earthquake, in a place that can withstand a 9.0 earthquake until they can be disassembled, is the only rational way to deal with the situation. I'm also for a very high level of diplomacy, us and the Russians recognizing what a mistake nuclear weapons overall have been and getting rid of them. Thank you for your attention.
You didn't state your name at the beginning. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Mary Hansen.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Izumi Stevens.
Hi, I'm Izumi Stevens. I-Z-U-M-I-S-T-P-H-E-N-S. My country has suffered right now very much earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear leak. And evacuated people 20 kilometers. And some people there because of they cannot abandon the maybe senior people or maybe livestock animals. This is a very scary situation. Even my family live in Tokyo. That is absolutely fear. So people are really scared about it. My country, twice we had a disaster. So one is obviously Nagasaki, Hiroshima. The second is Fukushima Daiichi right now. So it's why right now we have to do this nuclear weapon. I don't understand. Nuclear weapon is not a defensive weapon. That is obviously killing people. And we have to go to peaceful life, peaceful world. I'm so expecting United States is a country to be leader for this world, be provide peace. It's not the killing of people. That is my expectation. That's why I came to this country. So, ironically, my husband was Defense Department. So I love you guys because you guys helped, my country's people. Navy is very close to my house and, always I'm expecting. But anyway, $700 million, please invest investment for kids, education. That is what we need. We need more future. We don't need a weapon in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Tomlinson.
Barbara Tomlinson. There's this kid's question, what if they gave a war and nobody came? The simplest thing to do is the no, right now, for the immediate future, is the no action alternative. Leave the eelgrass alone, leave the baby salmon alone, no pile driving, driving the neighbors crazy. Just do nothing. Instead of increasing the wharf, decrease Trident. We don't need that many Tridents. I don't see it at all. We have this mindset, bigger is better. No, bigger is not always better. I've heard wonderful things said here, you know, and I endorse them all. But the simplest thing is right now, for the moment, to do nothing. Then we can figure out how to go about, you know, doing some more positive things. This book just came out, Confronting the Bomb, A Short History of the World Nuclear Disarmament Movement, and it brings a lot of research to bear on the fact that it states that deterrence did not come from the governments. It wasn't, remember MAD, MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction? That was not where deterrence came from. Deterrence, the fact that we didn't have a huge nuclear confrontation so far, was because of the international Ban the Bomb movement. Not because of what governments did, but because of people's movement pressuring their governments all over the world, Russia and Europe and Asia, as well as in the United States. And so that movement so far has been a success. And deterrence is a myth. I mean, when it comes to, you know, confrontation bristling with weapons, that is a myth and a fairy tale. And it's not the way it really works. We need to, as people said, think differently. Thank you very much. Bye.
The next speakers will be, looks like Dorley Rainix, followed by Gabrielle Lavallee, Tom Shea, Kathleen Wall, and David Hall.
I am Dorley Rainey.
Can you pull the mic up just a little bit? It was put down. There you go. Thank
Is
you
that
very
better?
Much. That's fair. Thank you.
I'm Dorley Rainey.
Thanks.
And I want to congratulate you on your beautiful illustrations of animals, of fish, of the orcas, and of the starfish, which you swore to protect. In your EIS, you have all the right words on how we're going to protect all these wonderful animals. We're going to stir up the ground way down under the water to really churn it up good, to bring up all the residue from all former oil and other spills. And we're going to protect these animals. And if we succeed in protecting a few orcas, we'll be really well off, and then we can use them, and we put microphones on them and sonar devices, and we can send them so that they can go and kill other people's submarines. Now, that's really commendable. And I would say what you should be doing is to go with the no action, and the day after you make that decision, there in December or whenever, you have to start trying to figure out how are you going to take care of the nuclear waste out of your current Tridents? Where are you going to dispose of them? Are you going to truck them to Hanford where they don't know what to do with it either? So start working on that in your environmental impact statements. Where are you going to store all this nuclear waste when you finally figure out that maybe the Trident is obsolete and should be dismantled?
Gabrielle Lavelle.
My name is Gabrielle Lavelle, and I must first say that I am totally against this project. It is a complete waste of taxpayer money and natural resources, and I agree with my fellow citizens here speaking out against this project. I'm very concerned about the impact to endangered species in this area, and I cannot trust those whose salaries are dependent upon the Navy. I don't believe that they would provide enough oversight, having actually seen a project in my own city and spoke with the construction workers about the impact they were having on trees, and they didn't care. I spoke to every different person involved with that project, and there was no change in how they dealt with that. And I have a feeling that that's the same type of thing that happens over this type of project. And I don't think there would be any citizen oversight that would not be receiving a paycheck from the Navy or the government. So that's one of my main concerns about the project. And then the fact is that I can't... Oh, okay. And then I want to say that, why I can't trust anyone who would be employed in this immoral occupation of perpetuating the myth that nuclear weapons will somehow protect us. Washington State is my home, as it was my mother's and my grandmother's and my grandparents before me. And will you consider me as part of the environmental impact? I'm a living, breathing mammal, and I am being adversely affected right now, my blood pressure. And I'm emotionally affected, and I'm going to be financially affected. I'm one of the youngest people in this room. And is there going to be Social Security for me? Am I going to have Medicare? I'm currently paying into it, but this whole military is 50% of our dollars go to it. And I'll just say that adding another $782 million, which I believe will be at least a billion, is just going to be a disgusting display of the arrogance of the United States government and its military. And this military does not protect me or my interests. And I ask each of you involved in this foolish and absurd venture to consider questioning the need to continue aiding and abetting in this pillaging of the American people for your own benefits. And I want to thank you for letting me speak, and I think it must be uncomfortable. I tried to make you uncomfortable, the people I spoke to in the other room, to have to directly face someone like me who opposes your criminal pursuits.
Next speaker is Tom Shea.
I'm going to use this Oreo cookie.
Could you just state your name for me, please?
Tom Shea.
Thank you.
I got that right. As a sort of metaphor for my few minutes, respectfully, you represent the brown part. It's hard, and it's all together. What I want to talk about is how you hear and how I hear. You hear from the positioning of having a job, and a job that you like, at least to the one person I talked to, and you're employed and find your work fulfilling, or you wouldn't be there, I'm sure. I represent the white part, grandparent of 14 with a 15th coming. So 10 parents, three of whom are unemployed. They lost their jobs. They'd like to work. They did work. They lost their jobs because of our economy, and two others are on the edge of that. So that's part of the people here, and how we hear and how you hear might be very different. You're the hard part. We're the white, sticky part in between. The wharf is the hard part, and it's being driven into like the soft sand, 1,250 piles being driven into the sand, a house built on sand. Relative to where what the wharf is serving, is anywhere in here the larger environment that numbers of people have spoken here? That wharf is serving something that's going out into the ocean, which has its own, these Trident submarines have their own impact on the environment, on the water. So you're connected, you're all connected. The wharf is connected with something. That's like, the wharf, there's just a wharf, and it's just how it's going to build, and it's all this good stuff about it. But it's on a white paste that is out there, the ocean. In fact, I was recommended to get this Northwest Training Range. What happens when a submarine goes out and shoots a missile up, practice or not? Where does that go? The person I talked to said, well, some they retrieve, and some just go into the ocean. I got to give a question to you before I leave. Does this statement in any way measure the amount of energy that goes into those power drivers for 5 years, 200 or whatever days a year? Is that in the statement? How much energy is there? And finally, a recommendation. When you're talking about environment, it's probably not a good idea
to have bottled water in plastic bottles. Thank you.
We hope you all made use of the recycling bins, however.
I brought my own.
Thank you. Ms. Wall?
Kathleen Wall. I came here tonight to greet my fellow citizens and to the people who represent the Navy. I am a citizen of the city of Seattle. I live between the Bangor submarine base and the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, like many of us do, most of us. I am, first of all, deeply impacted by this weapon system and by the whole nuclear system. And so is every creature, down to the tiniest, every plant. And as we speak, God knows what plume is heading our way. I would say to you that an explosive handling war, by the very name, speaks of something unthinkable. And two kinds of explosives, at least, will be there when the workers are working on those wharfs. The wharf we now have and the wharf that is in the planning stages. The nuclear missile motor explosive, as well as the nuclear explosive. I believe, and I have no proof of this, that if there was an explosion of the missile motor propellant, it could set off a nuclear weapon, the heat. A missile motor propellant is a very strong explosive. I do know that. The dangers are enormous, and we're talking about doing more of it. So I will say to you that I was here in the water to stop the first Trident submarine, the Ohio, when I was 45 years old. I am now 73, and I will spend the rest of my life being impacted by this weapon system and by the nuclear weapon and nuclear technology in general, because that's what you have asked of me. I beg you to reconsider, and I beg every one of you to take that message and the message you've heard here tonight out to the world. Thank you very much.
David Hall.
My name is Dave Hall. I'm a child family psychiatrist, a past national president of Physicians for Social Responsibility, and I'm here specifically this evening to say hello to Pete Dawson. I wanted to meet you. I would love to get a chance to chat with you as we did with Mark Olson a little while ago. I'm also one of the core members of the Ground Zero community that has our backyard fence, your fence at Bangor. I'm here with a difficult mission. Because I have very split loyalties in making comments here. My grandfather took the first ambulance corps from the West Coast to the First World War. My father, who was a surgeon, spent 2.5 years in the Navy as a lieutenant commander of a landing craft, which was the first hospital response following the wave of American soldiers going back through the Pacific. He was the one that went to the beaches and made the medical decision about who would go back to the hospital ship and who would stay on the beach. I was born 9 months after he got home. My uncle, his younger brother, died on an American destroyer in Suva Bay in 1942 at the hands of a Japanese torpedo. I have spent my career since graduating from medical school trying to serve my country in the ways that my family has served the country. I feel great affinity with those of you in the Navy who spend your careers for the protection and the safety and the welfare of the American dream. I have great respect for Navy professionalism. We absolutely rely on your professionalism with these horrible weapons that you are assigned to service and to protect, to keep them safe. You know about the accident in 2003. These sorts of things put all of us in the local community at potential risk. But the question that I want to raise here, and I understand this is outside the scope of the EIS because the scope of the EIS is way too narrow for the question that we want to raise here. The question I want to raise is, how do we find common ground? How do we find common ground? I work with an organization who sent physicians in 1985 to speak with President Gorbachev of the Soviet Union and help to convince him that nuclear weapons could never be used. It was a part of Gorbachev's decision to downscale the Soviet weapon system, and eventually led to the end of the Cold War. These weapons should have been eliminated at the end of the Cold War. They're still with us. We're still here to try to say, what can we do to prevent the horror that the nuclear weapons that we have to handle still because of American policy at Bangor, what can we do to keep them from ever being used again and to assist in their being eliminated? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That would bring up Glenn Milner.
My name is Glenn Milner. I have to say that this is actually a lot more frustrating of a process than I thought it would be. It's painful to me to see my fellow citizens speak about a $780 million or $782 million project that's so close to their lives, and they have 3 minutes to speak. I think there should be more time than that. I prepared a statement, I tried to pare it down as much as I could. It's not even close. I wanted to for sure state that I have a draft EIS for the Trident base when it was first proposed. And almost 37 years ago to this date, it was April 19th, 1974, the Navy conducted a scoping meeting in Silverdale. I also noticed, I don't know if that's the way things are going these days, but they had 5 minutes to speak at that at that scoping meeting. There's two people that I've known over the years and I admired that made statements that day. And I hope to be able to say more of what they said, and I'll just give them a couple of seconds. I hope they forgive me. Marie Bernard, living in Seattle. What Marie said on April 19th, 1974, was that most of the time I've heard how much the Navy was trying to protect the flora and fauna and the water and any pollution in the area, while their main intent is to kill human beings across the water in two other countries. Erwin Hogenauer is also a person that I greatly admired. He was there that day. He was 37 years ago. He said, "No one wants war, and yet we seem to do everything possible to hasten its coming." This is what the proposed expansion is of the present base will do. What is made secure by escalation of military might? My point's this: 37 years. This is 37 years ago, and we're still talking about the same things. We need to cut back on the submarines. We're trying to have a more advanced submarine base and a more advanced missile. We need to cut back. What I'd like to say is the draft EIS, which is supposed to be an open record, does not provide enough information for meaningful discussion. We're expected to accept the Navy's need without ever knowing the issues involved. I'm going to, I'll just hold up briefly. This is actually what, this is an arc map for the exposed mantling wharf. This actually has the second arc on it for the second wharf. This was given to me, 7 years ago, 8 years ago or so. But we can't talk about it now. This is another arc map. This is where, when they first upgraded to the D5, they moved a building to be out of that area. This is the type of thing that should be discussed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Is there anyone who has not spoken tonight who would like to speak, who's been encouraged or inspired by others? Then if you would just come on up, she'll hand you a card. You can even fill it out afterwards if you'd like. All I need for you to do is just give me your name. Why don't you pull the mic down so it's closer to you, too. There you go.
My name is Carol Milner. This is your future. This is mine. I'm a first-time grandmother. I expect to see more of these. I expect her to have an education, and I expect her to have health care, and I expect her to have the things that I had and more. And she's not going to have it with this.
It is now 9 o'clock, time for the end of the public hearing. I want to remind you guys just of a couple of things again, which is that these have been very great comments for us to hear, but they are only one way. I happen to know that only about 5% of the public in the U.S. is comfortable with public speaking. The other 95% aren't. So if you're one of those, or if you have comments, obviously, that couldn't fit within the 3 minutes, you're welcome to make as voluminous written comments as you would like. They will all be read, they will all be considered, and they will all be part of the record for the final EIS. So thank you very much for coming tonight, and we appreciate you being here. Good night.